Happy to see you all here. So the SMU Legislative Council public session is called to order at 18:05 on the 28th of October, 2021. The Student Society of McGill University acknowledges that McGill University is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe nations. The Student Society of McGill University recognizes and respects these nations as the true and constant custodians of the lands and waters on which we meet today. Further, the Student Society of McGill University commits to and respects the traditional laws and customs of these territories. We'll be proceeding to attendance. Before we begin attendance, I'd like to note for you all two resignations. Taisha Kaya, the representative of social work, has resigned, as well as Adil Kugelmas, the environment representative. All right. Councillor Kusa.
Present.
Councillor Javed.
Present.
Councillor Gurung.
Present.
Councillor Holton.
Present.
Councillor Josu.
Present.
Councillor Awan.
Present.
Councillor Daktuki.
Present.
Councillor Liao.
Present.
Councillor Pelsi.
Present.
Councillor Belia.
Present.
Councillor Applegate.
Present.
Councillor Dekoshi.
Present.
Councillor Saad.
Present.
Councillor Zhang.
Present.
Councillor Wan.
Present.
Councillor Hodadadi.
Present.
Councillor Eiley. Councillor Eiley. Councillor Demore.
Present.
Councillor Khamis.
Present.
Councillor Kazi. Councillor Kazi. Councillor Tiniakos.
Proxy is present, so present.
Hello, all right, we'll be noting that down. Thank you. All right. Councillor Clare.
Yeah, present.
Councillor Dariani. Oh, sorry. VP Downey.
Present.
VP Haisele Kubia.
Present.
VP Paulin. VP Delouvrier.
Ici présent.
VP Seder. Present. Awesome. All right, we'll be moving to the adoption of the agenda. If you have any modifications, please raise your hands. Vice President, External Affairs.
Yes, I would like to note that the Fallen report should be marked as postponed as the committees have not met yet. That would be the reports of the Community Engagement Committee, the Black Affairs Committee, and the Affordable Student Housing Committee.
Thank you, that will be marked.
Thank you.
So it's Community Engagement, Black Affairs, and?
Affordable Student Housing.
All right, if there are no other modifications to the agenda, can I get somebody to motion to adopt the agenda? Councillor Kusa?
Yeah, motion to adopt the agenda.
Can I get a second? Councillor Saad? Oh, I'll assume that you have seconded the motion.
Oh, yes, I'm seconding it.
Thank you. With this, if there are no objections, the agenda has been adopted. Seeing none, we'll now be proceeding to the minutes. So if we can get the minutes up. I hope you had the time to go through them in your own time before this meeting. We'll be scrolling through them now. And if there are any modifications that we should note, please let us know. VP Sater?
Yeah, I think there's two mistakes at the top of page 8. The first one is it says, instead of saying asks, it says Councilor Tiniakos sks. And then afterwards it says that the protest, it was about the SMU protest regarding the Royal Bank. That should say the Royal Vic, the Royal Victoria.
Thank you. We have noted this. Which page was the Royal Bank?
Right underneath, page 8. Protest moves, it's right up regarding the Royal Bank. It's the second line.
Thank you. With this, Vice President External Affairs.
Thank you. I would also like to note that it is not the SMU protest with the Royal Vic. It's the protest was conducted by the Royal Vic pour le bien public coalition, which is supported by the SMU. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been noted. If there are no further problems with the minutes, we'll be taking a motion to approve. Councillor Kusa?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Vice President External Affairs?
I second.
Perfect. Is there any opposition to this motion? Seeing none, we have unanimously approved the minutes. Perfect. We'll now be proceeding to the report of the steering committee. So the steering committee convened the 25th of October. All were present except the SMU president, and there were no guest speakers. The motions that were reviewed are listed in the report. These are the motion reviews. We did have one motion that came in late as an emergency that was further reviewed and passed through email. There is also a motion that will be voted on today, which was approved at the GA, but since the GA did not have enough people, it was turned into a consultative forum, and as such, we'll be voting on it today. If you scroll down to innovations, we have finalized our discussions for schedule change, and they're being presented to the executive committee for confirmation before being sent through here. It will be able to provide more information when the time comes. But all the decisions are being based on the polling data that we got. Finally, for reminders. First off, I would like to remind you all to please remember to share all of your motions with the parliamentarian, the governance manager, and myself. That way, everybody who deals with emotions are able to keep in touch. Secondly, very important, I want to remind you all to submit your reports. We have had multiple instances of people not submitting the reports that are due. This is essential that you submit your reports. There is no way around it. That's your job as a counselor. These reports have to be sent at minimum. That means you're still going to be late, but at minimum 48 hours before council. When you send it 48 hours before council, it counts as half an absence. An absent report means that you get a suspension from your role. The accountability committee has noted down the absences from reports. They have noted down the late reports, and they have noted down the reports that came in late, very late, before 48 hours before council. We understand that there are midterms. We understand that there's things going on, but I also have midterms. Other people within the organization still have midterms. Everybody's working. We should be able to still get the reports through. That is your engagement as counselors. I would also like to remind you all that the training that you had to do, the anti-violence training, we had almost 50% of people who did not go. I'll be sending an email regarding that very soon to get in touch and make sure there's a reason why you didn't go to the anti-violence training. All right. That is all. We do not have a confidential session this evening. So we'll now be moving to our guest speaker. One moment, please. All right. Yes. So the Dean of Science is with us today to give us a presentation. So I leave off the floor to you.
Good. Thank you. And I'm here tonight, not as the Dean of Science, but in my other role in the university as the academic lead of the NUVIC project. I wonder, can I use screen share? Because I've annotated my presentation in order to fit the boundary conditions that you'd set. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's all right. I'll give screen share permissions right now.
Thank you.
No worries. Should be able now.
Do you see my presentation? Do you see anything?
Yeah, it works.
Let me just go to full screen. Good, thank you. Yeah, it's a real pleasure to be able to speak to you all this evening. I've spoken to many of you in sort of subsets, but not in a formal way to SMU Legislative Council. I've spoken to constituent societies and also to the SMU leadership. So what I'll tell you about tonight, it's really a snapshot. It's a snapshot of a 12 to 13 year project of which we're close to the midway point. So to summarize 6.5 years of work in 10 minutes is a challenge, but let's see how that goes. As always, we always want to recognize through a land acknowledgement. I know that you've done it formally at the beginning of tonight's meeting.
Sorry, one moment. I think your live stream has froze, your share screen. Could you just scroll up and down so we can make sure that it's not frozen?
Is it? It's not working now?
No, I don't see anything.
Okay.
Would you like to try to share and unshare again?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Okay. All right, we can.
Is it working now?
Yeah. Okay. I'll let you know if it happens again.
Yeah, and then we'll go back to the one that I sent you if this isn't working. So we too, and within the project and all the constituents of McGill, always want to recognize through the land acknowledgement that the university and indeed the site that we're exploring has served as a meeting and exchange site among Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabeg nations. It's very important. It's really important that we start with actually because of a lot of confusion in the McGill public as to what we're actually talking about when we refer to the NUVIC project in the context of the Royal Victoria Hospital site. This map that I have here, so you see Pine Avenue, you see at the bottom a blue dotted blue line University Avenue, and the dotted blue is the entire site. This is, I think, 43 hectares. Of which only 15% of the site is what we refer to as the NUVIC site, NUVIC project site that is under McGill University's potential jurisdiction. At present, the entire site is controlled by its MUHC land, and it's being transferred to the SQI, which is the real estate arm of the government of Quebec. Once the transfer has occurred, McGill in the pink square there, or pink site, is going to control 15% of the entire site. And it's going to have, they're going to be very specific land limitations. The SY has developed its own master plan for the remaining 85%. And it released that in June. And you know, many of the discussions that I think are of interest to many members of the McGill community really are under the jurisdiction of the SQI and not the NUVIC project. But let's look at maybe what you know of the site. So if you're all very aware, of course, of Pine and University, can you see my cursor? Is it showing? Sometimes it doesn't work with Zoom. Anyway, the heritage buildings E, A, and L are the ones that you see from Pine and University. Those are the old gray stones you're familiar with from 1890s. S and M are the 1950s surgery and medicine buildings, these very tall buildings. That is the site that we're referring to. B and C perhaps could be in the next phase. The 1993 building is C, the old laundry is B, and X is the old powerhouse. F, R, and H, the women's, Ross and Hersey, will remain under the control of the SQI, and they're going to be developing them not in collaboration, but in harmony with the McGill project. That's the plan. But at this point, that's the future of the future. Let me give you a quick summary as to how we got to October 2021 in the project. The project became possible on April 15th, 2015, when the Royal Victoria Hospital left the site and moved to the Glen. In September 2015, the government of Quebec and McGill were in discussion about the potential for redeveloping the site. And there was actually a formal agreement of a feasibility study to be undertaken. That led in late fall 2015 to Principal Fortier striking a task force on the academic vision and the mission of the RVH site. So this was feasibility. This was the, in broad terms, is what could the university do in terms of repurposing the site, repurposing the buildings, because the heritage buildings we knew from day one would not be knocked down. They could only be redeveloped. And what would be the academic mission of that site if McGill were to be occupying it? Extensive discussions. This was a task force made up of around 25 members, staff, faculty, students, who met very regularly, received 41 different proposals from different parts of the campus, different sectors for the use of the site. Came forward, evaluated those, assimilated them, merged them. There were certain elements that the project couldn't explore, such as developing the site as a real estate site for any commercial use. There were immediate limitations set by the government. Those discussions, very, very engaging discussions, wide-ranging and engaging, I was a member of that task force, concluded that there should be two research pillars that would incorporate many of the aspirations of the university in terms of the future of research, sustainability systems, and public policy. And a third theme or activity, a key one, of teaching and learning. Because from day one, literally from day one, the very first meeting, it was defined that this site was not going to become what was referred euphemistically as a research ghetto. This was to be an extension of the campus, not a new campus. It's a very important principle that has been maintained all the way to this day in the development of the project. With that selection, there was an engagement with a architecture firm, Canon, and project managers who were used to Montreal project managers who were developing sites like this, leading that brought together user groups from a number of faculties, teaching and learning services, the VP research, communications, and facilities. So these user groups were actually defining what space would could be developed, what would be the purpose of that space? What would be the vocation of that space? All framed around the three pillars: sustainability systems, public policy, and teaching and learning. Those discussions led to the definition and a document of the RVH academic plan. And that was developed, written, submitted, and eventually passed and accepted at Senate in February 2018. Just go to the next slide for a moment. There's some really important takeaways in that academic plan. First of all, that it's, and I said, it's not, the site was not to be a new campus, it was to be an extension of the campus. So what by that, it means that students of all types, graduate students, undergraduate students, postdoctoral fellows, the university as a whole would find use and activity in that site. Who was going to go there on a permanent basis in terms of like moving from the lower campus was going to be defined by their activities, not to the departments or the faculties that they come from, because we have two research themes. And of course, implicit in this is that by leaving the existing campus, the lower campus, there was going to be released an equivalent amount of space. So the vocation of that space, the purpose of that space, has yet to be defined because those people who are moving have not been defined. But that space is going to be reassigned and redeveloped under the principles of the 2019 master plan, of which many members of the university, faculty, staff, and students were members of that master plan. So this is something that's really important for all of us to remember, that the release space is going to be an equivalent opportunity in terms of development of new vocation for space in the lower campus. If I go back up, I'm frozen again. Did I freeze? No. Okay. All right, very quickly. May 2019, world-class architects, Diamond Schmidt, were selected through a public tender process. Nine international firms bid on the project. Diamond Schmidt happens to be Canadian. We had British, Italian, French, and American firms bidding on this. But through a tender process, they won the project. They're very well known in Montreal because they did the Montreal Symphony about 6 years ago. They've done over 100 university buildings. And right now they're also redoing the Lincoln Center in New York, like a $750 million project. This process was framed around a number of user groups, and the project was presented to the university public through a series of town halls by the principal. What's really important is that the NUVIC project is intrinsic to the master plan. It's not separate. It's not a separate project from the university's intentions of how to develop space. So the academic plan involves these three elements of sustainability systems. There are many more other elements in sustainability systems, of course, including biosystems, but there's not space on the site for everything. Plus there's no formal moving of research facilities from McDonald campus. So materials, earth systems and urban systems, public policy built around the new school of public policy, Max Bell, and the teaching, learning and library services. So all of these have been designed to be on site and integrated. What's really important and something we really want to emphasize is that, going back to a comment I made a moment ago, that I'm listing here departments from which, or departments from which professors and their graduate students are active in this particular topic of molecular material systems. These departments, EPS, AOS, that's Atmospheric Oceanic Sciences, Geography, are involved in Earth Systems, and Geography, Civil Engineering, and Urban Planning are involved in Urban Systems. So these departments are not moving. It's researchers, professors, and their graduate students would be moving. Similarly with the public policy. So what we've been engaged in since May the 2019 is to develop basically from scratch an understanding of the space, the buildings, the heritage buildings, which we have to retain and renovate or repurpose, plus any potential new buildings. We were given permission we have developed plans to remove the 1950s buildings because they don't have heritage status and replace them with a new build. So this is not deliberately made to look like an electrical circuit diagram, but it's a good expression of the complexity of the project. We have a project team, professionals. I'm a member, as a faculty member and the academic lead of of the McGill team. We have external project managers, the architects, and dozens of electrical engineers, structural engineers, everything that you need to build a building from scratch of this size. The eventual building will have space equivalent to about two Stuart biologies. So that's, a good context for you. We've had a very rigorous and vigorous Indigenous engagement since January 2021 in order to develop a plan for Indigenous representation in the building and the site. A number of faculty-based town halls and information sessions, and different types of student engagement throughout the course of the project. And this evening just one form of that. It's really important as we build up the actual capabilities within this building. We have people who are laboratory specialists. We have people who are teaching and learning specialists. We have the library specialists. The teaching and learning and the library services people have in parallel, you probably know the Fiat Lux project with libraries and and all of the work teaching and learning does. They brought their experience from those projects to this project because we're on an extremely tight time frame for reasons I can explain in question period. So they brought their constituencies, their representations from the student voice, in particular the Fiat Lux project, brought their learning experiences to this project and allowed us to develop the library concept very quickly. All right, so I'm going to get to some images very quickly in a moment. I just want to tell you where we are. In May 2021, recently, this last May, the government of Quebec approved our opportunity study. That's the first phase. This then has gone to the Board of Governors of McGill. This was approved. This opportunity study, the dossier opportunité, was approved on October the 7th at our board. The SQI master plan was presented to the City of Montreal, received first reading. And we're now in public consultations. They were suspended just recently because of the civic election, and they will continue the day after the civic election. But I can send to any of the organizers and SMU, the public consultation site has 250 pages of documents, including some spectacular videos that were developed by the architects of the project. Our plan is to start work on the site this coming spring, and we have to submit a business case, a dossier fait d'affaires, to the government of Quebec for approval. We will begin that submission in around April 2022, because we have a provincial election coming in October 2022. So this, all the way back to 2019, created a tremendous amount of time pressure on the project. All right. The site's going to provide 1,100 undergraduate or graduate lecture room seats in 9 lecture rooms, ranging in size from 60 to 325 or 350, because the master plan identified that we were had a chronic shortage of large classrooms. At any given day, there will be 1,200 professors, graduate students, and postdoctoral fellows, almost 1,000 graduate students whose labs and research will reside on the site. And overall, because of the ins and outs of undergraduate lectures and staff, we'll have about 3,000 people on site at any given time. All right, let's do a tour, a quick tour. I'm on Penfield, I'm looking over in the site. This is the design that the architects have developed, the original heritage buildings that you see, but what you don't see is the world's ugliest parking lot above ground and underground. That is being replaced by a new forecourt that's going to be the site of an event space, a very large event space, and three large classrooms. This would be the aerial view of that forecourt. And what you see in the back of this image, or is what you don't see, are the 1950s buildings. They've been removed, and there's an entire new building behind that center heritage building. This enables, and it's very, very important to the people of Montreal, the city of Montreal, this enables new vistas of the mountain that haven't been seen since 1951. You'll also see between these two buildings to the left of the center building, a new staircase that goes all the way up to the Ross Pavilion. So it's the first time in probably 70 years that you can actually walk through the site. When you get up to the Ross Building and look back down towards Strathcona, what you now see the distance and beyond Strathcona building roofs, one of them will be laboratory based. Looks like my signal okay? I'm getting some signal problems. Am I okay still?
All good.
You following me? It's okay?
Yep.
Okay, very good. All right. And let me just wrap up with a fast walking tour. Entirely new approaches to the building. What's really important is we'll get into the whole site now by cutting away at Pine and University. It's very steep there, if those of you who've walked along Pine, completely incompatible with mobility access. That cutaway will then lead to a new entrance into the site. It can also be above the site into the main entrance of the Old Vic Hospital. This is now the roof of that you'll see of the event site, event space. But there's a second very large entrance that's being built. This is on University, where the old ER, the original ER for the hospital was. This will be a very important entrance site. And you see to the right of this image, the side of the new building. The event space is going to be able to accommodate probably 225 people for events and maybe 100 people for banquets and dinners. And so I'm one level up, like the balcony of the event space, and surrounding that are three classrooms that have very large skylights. The classrooms have not been designed, but they're going to be active learning classrooms. They're not going to be movie theater classrooms. We're not going to be making another Leacock. In fact, one of the architects was a math student at McGill. He then became an architect, and one of his pledges in this project is, we're not going to make another Leacock. The architects are very, very skilled at designing around concepts that aren't ones that we in the public really are that aware of, but they design around light. So there are going to be a series of atria, a central atria, the left image here, that what you enter into the building, the original heritage building, you walk into this space. This is the new building. But the heritage buildings are now going to be, you're going to see walls that haven't been exposed for 75 to 100 years. These on the right side image here are the internal walls of the heritage building, which will constitute the sides of new atria. So on the left image, what you're seeing there are basically corridors or balconies up six floors, and looking what's looking from those balconies are into all of the research laboratories. So there's going to be light everywhere for graduate students, for undergraduates. And you see a huge amount of casual space. This is what we've learned from the Fiat Lux project and everyone's involvement in the Fiat Lux project, that the time has long passed of people being in isolated rooms, studying and working. Students, you, we, faculty, learn and work everywhere. We're in a mobility state. So everything is going to be open, and with the recognition that people need to be comfortable, you need to have food services, you need to have light, you need to have good air, and you need to be able to have the opportunity to work where you want to work and not where it's designated. So this is what Diamond Schmidt's famous for, is actually opening areas up. And they led a long time ago, and they continue to lead in this. And they have great ideas in terms of how students use space. This is just an example of the use of one of the heritage rooms. This was one of these classic 1890s nursing wards. This had maybe 80 beds in it at one time, and then it became really bad offices in the 1950s. Blow it all away, 16-foot ceilings, and you have space that people can use. Again, opening up the space, creating air, creating light, so that we can accommodate a lot of students in classes, but especially out of classes. Because we know, I'm a chemist in the university. I've taught organic chemistry for 30 years. And I know that students need space to work, and we respect that. And this is just about the end of my presentation. So we're also going to have, we're going to relate the research labs to the university public. It might be an anthropology student, it might be a science student who's sitting using their laptop, having a cup of coffee after or before a lecture, but they'll be able to look into the research labs and actually see the activity. So these labs are really going to be living labs. So just as a wrap up, we're at this blue arrow. Public consultation is going to continue through November. The OCPM OCMP is going to be producing a report that will be available in late winter, early spring. We will respond to that to design changes. Right now, the design is at 30%, and our target is to get to 60% by spring when we submit the data. So that, thank you, is the project in a nutshell. And I welcome questions, but I also welcome, let me be so bold as I'd like to invite myself and my colleagues to further meetings, maybe late fall, early spring, as the project develops, so that you can see the progress of the project. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. This presentation is very appreciated. We'll now be entering a Q&A session. Vice President of External Affairs, do you have a point?
2 points, actually. The first one is just to Dr. Lennox, thank you very much for presenting. I do believe you were right the first time around. It's OCPM, not OCMP. But would it be in order to motion for Dr. Lennox's speaking time to be extended by 2 minutes for him to present the accessibility aspect of the NUVIC project?
That is entirely in order. Doctor, do you have something else to present if we give you a 2 minute extension?
I don't have other slides. If you'd like to speak to me, like me to speak about accessibility, I'd be. And the form of accessibility, are you referring to mobility accessibility? What do you mean? I can speak to that for certain, but.
Right of reply.
It wouldn't be a right of reply, but I'll give you the floor just to clarify
Thank you. Yeah, it was, I do remember you, Doctor, speaking about mobility, accessibility at our last meeting. I think it could really benefit the council here if you could maybe reiterate some of those points.
Sure.
I'll allow a 2-minute extension, sure, just to go over it, but it'll be a strict 2-minute because the presentation did go a bit over time.
Yeah. So there has been a great deal of detail and thought to this. This is a very difficult site because from the street level at Pine and University up to the top of the site, it's 40 meters. So access is through elevators, access is through stairs, access is through entrances. The side entrance that I'm showing here, is the screen still showing? So from University, access at different levels, through ramps, through shallow stairs, direct access into the building. This is a very important feature that people can go from University and Pine at grade and access the building. I mentioned the staircase that's going to go up between these two buildings, between the A building, the center building, and the new build. But there also will be elevator that takes anyone who a public elevator where people can go from the ground level up to the equivalent of the ninth floor, which is where the Ross is.
Thank you very much for the clarification. All right, we'll now be entertaining a question period. There you go. So all those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hand. Vice President of External Affairs.
Thank you. And first of all, thank you, Doctor, once again for coming and speaking to us today and taking the time to speak to us. I wanted to ask you a question regarding community consultations, as I know that it's been a point of contention with the Students' Society. Considering the consultations that have been done by the NUVIC team, would you be able to provide more information regarding the consultations that were done with community actors such as the CCMP or other members of the Coalition Royal-Vic pour le Bien Public, as Pierre Major, the director of the project, was unable to provide consultation results to us or the Community Affairs Commissioner? Thank you.
So certainly we have, the project has met with community groups, ranging from the Friends of the Mountain, a very important group, Milton Park community group. I don't have the proper names at my fingertips, but I can provide them to you for your minutes. This has been ongoing since the project started to develop. You mentioned the coalition. Is that the last one that you mentioned just now?
Yes.
I believe that didn't attend that meeting, but I believe that there was a meeting involving the coalition. But I can provide for your minutes the list of the community groups who have been consulted on an ongoing basis. Be happy to do that.
Thank you. Councillor Khamis.
Yes, so first and foremost, again, I'd just like to thank you so much, Dr. Lennox, for speaking to us today. It was such an excellent presentation. I think the student spaces, especially those as multi-purpose and thought out as the ones proposed, will definitely enrich university life and alleviate some of the demand surplus for learning spaces. And so my question for you today was, how will this project reaffirm McGill's commitment to sustainability, especially at a time where sustainability initiatives are super important and necessary?
Thank you for that question and comment. This project is about sustainability. The research activities, we will have over 100 professors in the university whose research is focused on sustainability. Everything from atmospheric modeling and climate change to inventing new processes, new chemical processes, new engineering processes that reduce energy costs and therefore are greener in quotations. This is unique in the world, the size of this facility. But we're also going to have 43 professors and their students who are experts in public policy, because we all know, and that's one of the big problems we have right now, is that what I might invent in my lab remains in my lab unless there's some type of policy facilitation of it actually being used. Even if it becomes commercial, what I invent in my lab, it's susceptible to whether it's commercially viable. So the policy aspect of this site and its relationship to sustainability is critical and unique in the world. But the site itself is going to be, it's going to be a LEED Gold building. We're going to have 500 geothermal wells. 50% of all the heat in this for this building is going to be derived from geothermal wells with no CO2 production. So this is going to be really a first for McGill. We have no geothermal wells, but it's also going to be a real statement. You know, the expression that you have to walk the talk. We could study sustainability, but if this building is not meeting the highest standards of sustainability, we're saying basically hypocrites, and we're watching this very carefully, and it's intrinsic to the design.
Thank you. Vice President DeLucchi.
Thank you. And thank you, Doctor, for those answers, which are actually really helpful, in my opinion, with the main positive points about the NUVIC project. At this time, you mentioned a lot of consultations dating back to 2015, 2018, and 2019, if I'm not mistaken. And while those you said relate back to McGill's master plan, considering that it's not its own individual project, would you be able to explain how you've adapted those consultations to student and faculty needs post-pandemic, considering the outcomes that the pandemic can have had and the strain that the pandemic can have caused on the student body?
We're certainly aware of it, and we've discussed it, and we have deliberately not committed to configurations and a particular infrastructure for the classroom settings, because we're really not sure what's going to be the state of the art post-pandemic in that regard. I mean, we're going back to in-person teaching in classrooms right now, of course, but six months ago, we weren't certain that was ever going to happen, or perhaps I wasn't certain. So we're aware of it, and you know, we're at 30% design, so we know where everything is going to go, but we don't have, we're not defining the details of many of those things at this stage. So we're fortunate, and we're going to be looking at the new model of work, especially for the support staff. We're going to be, you know, how do we configure those offices, because we have a lot of, you know, support staff, administrators and support staff, and just the way that students will be interacting. My hunch is that we're going to be in a very good shape in regards to the student space, because we're designing it to be open. And that has turned out to be probably the most essential element of indoor safety, is openness with state-of-the-art ventilation. The labs will have 12 air exchanges per hour, and the public space is probably 8, which will, you know, greatly exceed pretty much any conventional building in the public space. But we'll have to see, you know, when we get the final engineering reports. Everyone's asking the question you're asking about their existing buildings worldwide, and even a number of the large real estate developers are using this as a chance to redevelop sites that are incomplete. I wish we were much further ahead in the project, but this might be one advantage we have, that we're not at that point of having to make those detailed decisions.
Thank you. We have time for two more speakers. Councillor Yang.
I would just like to start off by saying thank you, Dr. Lennox, for your amazing presentation. The pictures more than speak for themselves. And I believe that this is something that not only McGill, but the world desperately needs. So my question is just, can you tell us a bit more about the Indigenous consultation done regarding this project?
I didn't hear the very last sentence that you spoke.
Repeat, sorry, please. Yes, of course. Can you just tell us a bit more about the Indigenous consultation done regarding this project?
Yes, for certain. The project through public tender engaged a Indigenous community consultant company that is headed by Indigenous people. And they've and they're very experienced at creating an engagement process that they led us through. So we have both the McGill Indigenous Collective, I believe it's called. We had a meeting this week that brought in through the Zoom meeting, and it's not the first time. It's an ongoing process of leaders of Indigenous communities in the Montreal region and in northern Quebec. And what has come out of these discussions, many discussions since January, is a series of potential representations, everything from sculpture to landscaping to garden design to interior artwork to actual interior shaping of spaces that have their origins in Indigenous culture. So it's been fascinating for me because this form of interaction is quite new to me, and just the way that people have been expressing what's really important in terms of Indigenous representation. So, for example, we had an eloquent Indigenous leader say that it was very important that somewhere on the site that there be fire, that there be a site where we can have an ongoing fire that people can, because fire is so fundamental to Indigenous societies, and running water. So that report is just being prepared, and it's going to be presented to the architects to ask them how to incorporate as many of these ideas into the project as possible.
Thank you.
The consulting company is called Acosys, A-C-C-O-S-Y-S. You can look them up. Really, really skilled. They're not mediators. They're people who bring people together and create one language around a meeting. Very, very interesting type of business, an essential one.
Thank you. We have time for one more question. Vice President, External Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Following up on your response regarding Indigenous consultation, Doctor, I would like to say how much I appreciate the fact that you hired this Indigenous consultation company. However, would you be able to speak to the consultations done / after the council meeting, provide a report summarizing the results of the consultations made with McGill Indigenous student groups, such as the SMU Indigenous Affairs Committee, the Indigenous Student Alliance, the Indigenous Law Association de Droit Autochtone, and the Indigenous Health Interest Group?
I'm not sure what the question, are you asking if those groups have been part of the consultation or?
I'm asking if you might be able to speak to the results of the consultations made with these groups, and maybe even after the council meeting, provide a report of these consultations.
Yeah, so I can't speak to that because I'm not present at all those meetings. It's the McGill Indigenous Collective, of which I imagine, but I don't know for a fact, that those groups are members of that. We certainly have student members at the meetings, but I don't know what their affiliation is. I'll give that the report of the participation. But the report itself is not complete. It's the report of the consultation is now in the hands or is being prepared for the architects to evaluate in an iterative way. But I will get attendance if that's sought after of the different meetings.
Thank you very much. Okay. Vice President External, is that a point?
Yes, I would like to motion for a 3-minute extension on the question period.
That's in order. Is there a second to this motion? Councillor Yang? Feel free to speak up when I name you, just to confirm that you're seconding and
Seconded.
Perfect, thank you. Seeing this, is there any opposition to this extension? Seeing none, we'll be entering a 3-minute. Oh, Councillor Wan?
I vote.
Okay. Because of this, we'll be entertaining a vote. One moment. All right. Seems like my polls were disabled. Instead, what we're going to do is please vote using the reaction yes or no at my count on whether or not you'd like an extension. Please vote now. Councillor Khodadadi, is that a question or a point?
No, sorry. It was a mistake, sorry.
No worries. Please do use the check mark or the X. Give a few more seconds to finish off. All right, with 12 votes for and 11 votes against, this passes by simple majority. We'll now be entertaining a three-minute extension. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Vice President of External Affairs, you have the floor.
Thank you. I would just like to ask a question following up on one of my previous points regarding the effects of the pandemic on the student body. Seeing how much the pandemic has influenced students and the needs that they have today, how has the new Vic team reevaluated the project and reevaluated the plans that have been designed to include maybe some answers to these concerns, such as affordable student housing or even just financial aid centers or other community spaces?
Okay, so the project, as you're now aware, is creating space for teaching, learning, and research activities. And as I stress, it's an extension of the campus. So the project has not changed. It's the elements that make up those three pillars. In response to the pandemic, because they're intrinsic to the university activity and they're aligned with the academic plan. If there are new features that are arising and the needs within the university public, including, of course, the students, those will be best addressed by released space. And that's because once you set on a path, as we have been on, to design a building and these elements and the costing and obtaining the costing, you have to stay on that path. It's not a blind path. It's a path that's been, you know, debated and discussed and through user groups developed a great deal of consensus. So we all know that a building that's going to open in 2028, that 2028 is not 2021. So that recognition has created a flexible design, flexible space, a great deal of open space. But I really have to stress that if we're creating 250,000 net square feet, usable square feet, that's not hallways and washrooms, but like space that people use, 250,000, which is what this project is, we're going to be releasing close to the equivalent on the lower campus. And it's at that stage, which might be in 2 or 3 years from now, when that planning is undertaken as to what's released, that I think the 2028 becomes more of a reality. It's the challenge. This is not a renovation. This is building a huge building with huge heritage buildings attached, so that it's the process is very long, and you can't respond to contemporary conditions when you're undertaking a design like this.
Thank you. We have time for one more question. Councillor Khamis.
Yes, hello again, Dr. Lennox. So I was wondering if you could tell us about how you and the team have considered the importance of student transparency and consultation throughout the entire project timeline.
Well, the project began with a very important core student voice representation. I remember it well. I can't remember the names of the individuals, but they're on record. A graduate student, postdoc, and undergraduate. So it was the development of the academic plan that set the whole project in the direction that we currently are in. Even the ratios, the eventual ratios of the space, we're ensuring that there will be informal study space, informal cafe space, etc. These remain intrinsic. The challenge, and I didn't know this when I began this, because you know I'm an academic, I'm a professor, and I'm now involved as the academic lead of this huge construction project. That's the key point in the decision making, is what activity are you going to support? And we've been on that path since spring of 2016. And when we've got to details, as we are at, limited as they are at 30% design, the really extensive discussions, of which I was part of, for the Fiat Lux project, the library project, have been brought into this project. So we did not invent a new view on the use of student space, because it was contemporary. The Fiat Lux project is actually not even as advanced as this project, but the consultations took over a year. The Dean of Libraries and her staff, brought those consultations into the project. That is, those are the elements. I guess the discussion would be as to what is transparency. Those were decisions that were made from the very beginning when there were students involved.
Thank you very much. That is all the time we have for questions at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
If there are any motions, I will take them now. Seeing none, thank you very much, Doctor, for your presentation and for your very thorough answers to questions.
Well, I'm pleased to be here. I would welcome a return invitation. And as we progress in the project, I think it's really important to get people's reaction and also to spread the word, because if I just may add one last word, is that although we've been able to speak about the project to the university public, we've had to do it cautiously, and we haven't been able to speak to the public at all until the government of Quebec approved the DAO, the opportunity study. At that point, we were able to go live. So we've been working on a project for 4 years without being able to show it to the public. We've been able to talk about it, but we have not, like these renderings that you've seen tonight are ones that we were not able to actually show until June the 27th of this year. So it's quite difficult to drum up interest and excitement when you can't show your cards. But we can do so, and I invite you to tell people about it. And I'm very happy to speak to other groups, small student groups, if you wish.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This, good evening. Have a good evening.
I'm going to Australia now for the rest of the evening for a meeting. So thank you for scheduling me early. Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Doctor.
All right. Seeing this end of our guest speaker's presentation, we'll now be moving to agenda point number 8, the announcements. All those wishing to make an announcement, please raise your hand at this time. Vice President of External Affairs, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I would simply like to make an announcement on behalf of the governance manager who is not able to attend at this time. Simply to remind everyone to announce to your constituents that the fall referendum campaign period starts next week, and I would like to encourage you all to look out for the different referendum questions, vote, inform your constituents about it, especially the ones that would be most relevant to them, and inform yourselves about what questions are going to be brought up at referendum. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice President Finance, you have the floor.
So in the same vein, just an announcement for everyone, I guess, about tonight. Tonight, we will be voting on all the referendum questions that could be brought up to referendum in 2 weeks. And I just wanted to say that this is, you know, it's an important job for everyone here to do their due diligence on these motions. Ask any logistical or informational questions on them that you can, and try and take this, I guess, as seriously as possible, because this is, you are the step that either determines whether the students will vote on it or not. And oftentimes there is, I guess, a lack of clarity in the way, certain motions kind of are presenters, things like that. So making sure that all these motions are kind of taken seriously, I think would be important tonight, and that Ledge Council, you know, does its due diligence on knowing, and on understanding what they're voting for.
Thank you very much. And I absolutely second what the Vice President of Finance has said. And as always, I'd like to remind you all that you must vote. It is your responsibility to vote. If there are any other announcements, please raise your hand now. Vice President External.
Thank you. I was hoping to yield the floor to Arts Representative Kuza, just to speak for 2 minutes about the open arts representation spot, and to see if maybe other counselors could help in that process.
Representative accepts.
Yes. So thank you, Sasha, for reminding me about that. So if anyone knows anyone who would be interested in being the third arts rep, please reach out to them. I think it's super important to have the third seat filled. Because arts is the biggest faculty on in SPU. So yeah. Anyway, and please feel free to message me, DM me, email me if you know of anyone who'd be interested, or message them and tell them to message me. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much, Council. All those wishing to speak. Seeing none, we'll be moving on to question period. Before we begin by taking questions, we have received a question from constituents. All right, so this is a question that has been received by myself and the governance manager. The question is, Darshan Narayani, SMU president, has been absent at the last few Legislative Council and events and has been unresponsive to messages. So where is Darshan Narayani? If he is currently present at the meeting, can he explain his absence and in recent times? If he is absent, can another SMU executive provide more information on his whereabouts, given that his presence is essential for the proper functioning of the society? We will be taking answers to this question at this time. All those wishing to answer, please have your hands raised. Vice President Finance.
President is on leave at this time, and I would ask everyone to respect his privacy at this time. And I can confirm the society is functioning quite well.
Thank you. If there's anybody else wishing to answer this question, please raise your hand. Seeing none, we'll be proceeding as normal with question period, as I have not received any other questions. All those wishing to ask questions, please raise your hands now.
Alex, we have another question in the mail.
Have we just received it?
Mikhail sent us the questions a while back. If you could
All right. Could you send it to me and I'll read it out if you want, or you could go ahead and read it.
Sure, just give me a second.
Questions are one thing that gets lost easily. Yeah, you get so many emails all the time.
So we have another question. Anybody willing to answer this? Where is the general manager? The general manager is a non-voting member of both the board of directors and the legislative council, but has not been at any meeting. Have they been fired?
Thank you. All those wishing to answer, please raise your hands now. Vice President Finance.
The general manager is on leave, and I would ask everyone to please respect his privacy.
Thank you, Vice President Finance. And thank you, Jazz, for reminding me about that question and for saying it out loud. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Counselor Awan.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. This is for VP Student Life. And also, I just wanted to say it's the first Ledge Council that myself and other clubs rep have been able to attend after our election earlier this semester. So I apologize if it sounds like we're digging up old material, but a lot of clubs and people within SMU have reached out to us in this regard and continue to reach out to us. So I think it's important to mention. So as you guys know, clubs are really struggling to attract membership in the context of COVID, and especially younger members who like first and second years at McGill. And this is a particularly important challenge, I think, because as some of you might know, clubs and services were adopted as SMU's single
highest priority. Sorry, Counselor, if you could just get to the question, please.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so I in given that context, I wanted to ask VP Student Life if they could speak to what have happened with Activities Night earlier this semester, why it had to be scheduled, and what measures are in place to make sure that clubs are able to get a fulfilling experience out of the second attempt that's coming up at it.
Thank you. All those wishing to answer the question, please raise your hands now. VP Student Life.
Hi, everyone. Okay, so Activities Night, the first edition, we did an in-person event and an online event. We purchased GatherTown as our platform. We purchased Two Worlds, and it did not hold up. The manager of GatherTown did not help with technical difficulties. And it was only working like after 40, 48 minutes, but it was too late. People were really upset. So then after that, immediately we started planning for Activity Site 2.0, which is November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, which is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, in person at Centre Mont-Royal. Each day we have different categories. And the reason why we did not do an in-person fair event for the first edition is because this was planned in June. In June, there were no vaccine passports. No venue would take more than 150 people. So it was a big struggle. So we went ahead with the virtual option. But for the second option, we're doing an in-person event, like I said, at Centre Mont-Royal for 3 days. And we're also doing a hybrid option, which is via Zoom in breakout rooms. So we're doing our best. The first edition went just south. That's the truth. But we we're fully refunded for the platform at least, so we can make a better event this time.
Thank you. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Councilor Arwan, I know you probably have a follow-up. We'll just do the loop of the other questions and get back to you. Councilor Mirescu. Sorry, I mispronounced your name. How do I pronounce
it? Okay. It's Mirescu, but it's okay. Thank you. So my question is to the VP external. So given that McGill administration has had numerous continuous consultations with students since 2015, as Dr. Lennox just informed us, my question is, why has SMU lacked the same diligence when it comes to consulting its own student body? Thank you.
Thank you. All those wishing to answer, please raise your hands now. Vice President, External Affairs.
Could you please ask Mr. Speaker, the counselor, to repeat that very last part of the question?
Of course. Please go ahead.
Okay, so my question is, why has SMU lacked the same diligence when it comes to consulting its own student body?
Go for it, VP External Affairs.
Thank you. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to disagree with you on the point that you're implying here of SMU's lack of diligence. There's two points I'd like to make regarding your question. The first one being that while Dr. Lennox, who graced us with his presence, was able to provide instances of consultation when myself and my team spoke to Dr. Lennox and Pierre Major, the director of the project, about consultations, neither one of them were able to provide further information or reports on those said consultations, explaining what the results of the consultations were. In regards to SMU's consultation process, I'm also going to have to disagree with you on the due diligence that was done. Our consultation process was actually not limited to the McGill student body. We developed our consultations with the Royal Vic pour le Bien Public Coalition, which did consultations all around Montreal, particularly in the communities most affected by what happens to the War of Victoria, specifically the Milton Park Citizens Committee. As such, our consultations were completed through the coalition, and we assisted the coalition to get as much reach as possible in regards to who was consulted. Thank you.
Would it be possible to respond to this? Sorry.
No, not at this time. You'll be able to ask another question once I am done doing the circle if you have a follow-up, but you'll be also able to discuss this at a future time with the Vice President External, maybe through email, but question period is just for questions, no debate. All those wishing to ask questions, please raise your hands now. Councilor Saad.
Thank you. So this question can either go to any of the executives or the VP Finance, you know, whoever prefers to deal with this. But it is, again, about the president, but a different question. So the president is not only an elected official, but also a paid employee of the student society. And so there are finances to take into consideration. And it isn't just about the society functioning well. It goes a little beyond that. Now, of course, there could be a delicate or personal situation to which, you know, we don't need to be privy to the details, but I would be doing a disservice to our constituents if I didn't at least inquire.
Please once again, get to the question. Mm-hmm.
So the question is the president's leave paid or unpaid?
Thank you for your question. Vice President Finance, you have the floor.
As you, thank you, Speaker. As Councillor Saad put it eloquently, the president is an employee of the society, and thus anything to do with his status as an employee is confidential information and does not pertain to the political nature of the Legislative Council.
Thank you very much, and thank you for abiding by parliamentary procedure. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hand. Councillor Awan.
Hi, yeah, just for the VP Student Life again, clubs have also been reaching out to express frustration, in particular with the fact that it seems to them, at least, like a lot of labor went into organizing the after hours party at Musique rather than the virtual activities night itself the first time around. And like, I've just been hearing that they think this event took away from the actual like reaching out to clubs that they've been able to do across multiple days in the past. And I know that's the case for the second time, but I just wanted to ask you to speak to like why that decision was made for the first activities night.
Thank you for your question. All those wishing to answer this question, please raise your hand. VP Student Life.
For sure. So when activities night in the first edition was planned, we decided to do a different format. So one online, so a fair, and then the second would be a networking party, sort of welcome back to student life. We were trying a different format. Things usually don't go well. We introduce new things to SMU because I wanted to sort of break that and see how it would go. We tried it. A lot of effort was put into both events, the online platform and also the in-person event. I had consultations with clubs after the event and before the event, but after I heard their concerns and I took into account everything to ensure that the second edition first respects the format that was done in previous years and also that makes up for the mistake that occurred in the first edition of the event. It is important for me to acknowledge that the first event was not successful. I have to admit that. But for the second edition, a lot more consultation has been done. And I've listened to all the constituents to ensure that we do the right thing this time and cater to our club services, community groups, and everyone else for the second time.
Thank you very much, Vice President. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hand. We have time for one more. Councilor Mircescu.
Yeah, so I'd like to bring a clarification because I did read the statement from the coalition, and I believe that the VP External is mischaracterizing the letter in his speech. So they did not oppose the Royal Victoria project, but rather the possibility that in the future, i.e. like the 85% left of the site would be privatized. So they opposed that part and not the Royal Victoria project. Sorry about that. And so as a student representative, both you and me, I'd like to ask a question for students. So can you characterize the specific measures that relate directly to McGill students when it comes to a referendum or any other questions that you might have asked the students to, or tried to engage the students directly and not the rest of the community? Sorry, my question wasn't clear.
Thank you. All those wishing to answer this question, please raise your hands now. Vice President of External Affairs.
Thank you for your question, and I hope I'm able to answer each part of it. If so, I will ask the speaker to please remind me which parts I missed. In regards to your question, once again, about consultation, I do believe that consultation with the community in which McGill students are a part of is very important, particularly when it pertains to the well-being of multiple communities and groups of people, whether it be students or not. In terms of student consultations directly, we actually had the opportunity to speak about it in our listservs, to table at activities night, and just being constant conversations with our constituents regarding the Royal Victoria. And while it may seem that only 15% is going to McGill, in regards to land size, only 15% would be going to McGill. However, in regards to space size and building size, we can see that a lot more than 50% of the infrastructure of the buildings of the site are going to McGill. The coalition opposes the privatization of the hospital, whether that be the SQI's goal of building government buildings. However, the SQI remains a government entity. As such, the privatization that would happen through McGill and the New Vic project is more important to the coalition, especially because we would like to ensure that if McGill is going to be doing a project here and on the Royal Victoria, that it benefits the majority of students and issues, and that it benefits students in ways that actually tackle the majority of students' daily issues, day-to-day difficulties and obstacles. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With this, our question period extends. If there are any points, please make them known now. Seeing none, we'll be moving on to the recess and consent items. So I'll just remind you for the new members who are here. Consent items are the different items we're going to vote on today, the different motions that we're voting on today. Basically, through this vote, you will be able to choose either to consent to passing this item of the agenda or to debate it. If a single person votes to debate an item, the item will be debated. But if everybody consents to the passing of the item will pass and there will be no debate and no further vote. The item will pass unanimously. Is there any questions about that? All right. So before we do enter the recess, I'll just ask that you all go onto our folder and find the consent item. You should have the voting sheet as always. So if you can't find it, please let me know right about now.
Yeah, could you send the link in the chat if possible?
Yes.
Thank you.
One moment, I realized it was not open to responses. I've put the form in the chat. I'd like to remind non-voting members or non-voting members of the gallery to not vote. And I also want to give my apologies. There was a previous procedural vote about the extension of the question period in which I did not realize, but some members of the gallery did vote in that. I want to give my public apology to you all. It's hard to discern who is a member of the gallery and who is not through the Zoom format. All right, so we have a 5-minute recess now, as you can go through in your own time in those 5 minutes, different motions. And as such, we'll be back in 5 minutes. So 7:37.